It is 12 noon on Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio. This edition of the Epic Storytelling Hour was pre-recorded for broadcast on Monday, March 6th, 2017, in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. I'm Fanny Crawford, your storytelling host, and you can tune in to Epic Radio at www.enlightenradio.org. We have a special guest today, a bit outside of our usual storyteller profile. Larry Lettich is a therapist in private practice in Frederick and Rockville, Maryland. He's an individual therapist, a couples counselor, and an expert on adult ADHD. He's also the co-author of a book, I Know I'm In There Somewhere, A Woman's Guide to Finding Her Inner Voice and Living a Life of Authenticity. And he's working on a new book that links storytelling to his therapeutic mission. One of Larry's taglines that I've heard several times, and this is what intrigued me and convinced me to get him on the show, one of his taglines is, "We are made of bodies and stories." Welcome, Larry Lettich, to Epic Radio.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you.
It's taken a while. I'm really glad you're with us today. So I thought you could start by telling us a bit about these two books, or at least the one that's already out there.
Well, sure. Well, to start with, you know, it did say, I know I'm in there somewhere, A Woman's Guide to Finding Her Inner Voice and Living a Life of Authenticity. So you might be wondering why it would be written, or I would be the co-author of that book. So, you know, therein lies the story.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, this started with my wife, who's a therapist, Helene Brenner, a psychologist, and this is way back in 1998, and she was telling me, I'd like to write a book. And that's just the kind of person she is. She just comes out and says, I feel like writing a book. And I don't argue with her. Okay, sure.
I've met Helene. I can see that happening.
So she was throwing out various ideas and everything. And one day we were sitting in our hot tub. It was February of 1999. Yeah, that was 18 years ago. And she says, what do you think of this idea? I want to write a book on women finding and following their inner voice. I said, that's a book. Okay, that sounds good. That sounds like a good idea. So she starts to take all these notes for the next 8 or 9 months. And then the name of the book came to her, and she was researching publishing and everything like that, and how to get things published. And we even got an agent interested, and then she started to work on it. And well, she is a writer, but I was a professional writer before becoming a therapist. And I could tell that as good as she was, which she was good as a writer, to bring it up to that level, I had to get involved. So I got really involved in writing and helping her write it and helping her sell it and the whole thing. And we worked on it for like 4 years. And we made a choice early on that it was going to be her book.
Sure.
Right. It was really her book. You know, it was a woman's guide to finding your inner voice and all of that. So I had to learn to write in her voice, you know, which was really kind of a fascinating experience.
Oh, I bet it was. Yeah.
And, you know, her stories from the clients she was seeing, and capturing them and capturing their voice, but most of all, capturing her voice throughout the entire book. And it was really exciting because there were a lot of stories from women and moments of therapy that we captured in the book. So it was like a lot of women's stories in it. And it was just an extraordinary experience. I really enjoyed it. And let me think, there was something I wanted to say.
Well, you were talking about linking that first book to your new theme about bodies and stories. Sure. And I can see how working with someone else's voice and helping somebody else organize their thoughts would help to clarify that idea.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I really got into writing in her voice. But now, when I talk about bodies and stories, what do I mean by we are made of bodies and stories? And now I've decided there really are, that's two out of three things.
Mm-hmm.
There's right. not all of it, but we are made of bodies and stories. Well, first off, we're bodies. We don't recognize how much we're really bodies. We're nervous systems. We're animals. There's a whole level of our existence that's subverbal.
Mm-hmm.
That's the basis of us. We're not. When we think we're so smart, we think that our heads and our thoughts and our words and our feelings, even our feelings, are who we are. But there's actually this whole other level of who we are that's actually below that.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the body. It's all about our reactions. We're to be more accurate, more mammals. We're like horses. We move towards things, and we move away from things. And when we get upset, we rear up and neigh and throw our feet up, and hands up in the air. And we get, this is how we really are. And I'm dealing with that all the time with people. And I sometimes say, I feel like, I need to get in touch. I work with a lot of men. Maybe that's part of the reason about this. But it's like, I got to be in touch with their horse, with the horse inside of them.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Because if you're not working with the horse, if you're not talking to the horse, they're not with you. You're getting really nowhere. I mean, think about it in your own life. You know when you sort of say, I know how I should feel this way. I shouldn't feel angry. And you do. You know that you feel the way you feel, and there's no way you can talk yourself out of it. That's you. That's underneath. That's the subverbal you, and you can't make a change.
So it's partly about energy and about the desire to move forward, to know where you're going. And
absolutely, because on the body level, you know what you want, you know what you're avoiding. And also you react to things. You react to things the way horses react without words.
Mm-hmm.
So this is funny because this part's not about story, because this is the part that has no words. And we react that way. We are constantly in the moment reacting that way. But then there's a story on top of that. That's the interesting thing. Whatever we're reacting to, we then have a story about how we're reacting.
So human beings are successful insofar as we can harness that energy and that raw drive and create a story that matches for us, create a story that takes us someplace.
Actually, you're right. It's interesting you say that, because you're, bringing me kind of ahead, because you're actually right about that. Because you need a story that is congruent. A lot of people's stories are not very good stories, or they're not even true stories. We do make up a lot of stories. So you feel like, you may think that something's going on, and then you kind of put it on the other person. Well, he's doing that to me.
Right.
Or that's how he always is. Or that's how she always is. And without ever realizing, I'm just a kind of scared person. But I'd rather think that it's the other person who's making me feel terrible.
So part of your job as a therapist is to help people recognize their own stories, get them to be able to articulate the stories that they're telling themselves.
Absolutely. Absolutely, yeah.
And so that's maybe leads into the third thing?
Not yet. I don't want to go there yet.
I can take my time and wait.
I think that's right. But first, I just want to stay on the thing of stories, because there is so much about that inside of us. There's so many stories we have. We live you're right, we live these stories we have inside of us all the time that are tied to our nervous systems. I like to talk about nervous systems because it's more than our brains. It's the way our whole body reacts. Is all about it. It's everything. The brain and the body are so connected.
Right, right.
It's not even, a lot of what we think is happening in our brain may not even be happening in our brain.
Mm-hmm.
It could be happening down in our chest, in our stomach. But whatever's going on down there then goes straight up into our brain, and then we start thinking about it. And then we have a good story about it. We'll find a story about it, and it's very unconscious, the story we make up. It really is, and then we pull up the memories that we think fit that story. People come to therapy very distressed.
Yeah.
Their bodies are very distressed. Their nervous systems are very distressed, and the stories then that come to them are distressing stories. I feel terrible. I feel like a bat. My life is horrible, and my husband's horrible, and my son and my kids are terrible. You know, everything. And my boss is even worse. You know, everything is bad.
And that's the story that they're telling themselves.
That's the story, yeah. Now, I don't try to tell them their story is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to listen to the story and listen to all the distress underneath. And then the story, and then hopefully the story can start to not seem like such a fixed story.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have all the stories we've been told and all the stories we grew up with and all the stories we were told when we were from our parents. You know, I love this line from the song Children Will Listen from Into the Woods. It says, careful the tales you tell, that is the spell. And we cast spells on our children with the tales we tell them, the stories we're telling them.
I'm getting chills.
Yeah, it's an amazing line because, yeah, what stories you tell them, they're going to carry.
Mm-hmm.
Stories about life, stories about family, stories about themselves, stories about other people.
So then what is your job as a therapist? How do you come
being
into
aware,
that?
Aware. My feeling is a lot. I'm in making people conscious. It's actually slowing people down and making people conscious of what is going on. What's going on in their bodies? What's going on? What are the stories that are coming to them in the moment?
Mm-hmm.
What are the stories that they're living right in that moment? Because stories aren't fixed things, and they aren't past things, and they aren't just something you tell at night. They're happening every moment. You're living a story.
Mm-hmm.
And the important thing is to be conscious of that story. Is it working for you? You know, people have so much pain. Sometimes when people have really traumatic pasts, I feel like what we're aiming for eventually is the healing story. You know, because people are so overwhelmed. Often people are so overwhelmed by something terrible, something awful that happened, that they can't even organize. Their bodies can't even organize what happened to them, and they just bury it. And then it comes back, and it keeps coming back and coming back because the mind keeps trying to make sense of it.
Mm.
And they can't make sense of it. They can't make sense of it. And they can't make sense of it because they haven't told it. They haven't told it enough yet.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't told anybody enough what happened to somebody who can hear it and understand what it was like.
So it's almost a pre-verbal story at that point. It's just the traumatic experience.
It's just the experience. You can't get over that on that level. The odd thing is you have to have the place where you've healed that story, where you get to where, okay, I've told this, and somebody heard it, and it really it happened to me. Eventually it gets to the place where this was something that happened to me. It was a bad thing that happened to me. But it's not happening to me now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's healing. And also what's healing is saying, and there's other things that happened to me, good things, where I grew, where I was able to live through it, and here I am today. Those are all the healing messages, and that's where we go eventually, is the healing story.
Okay, hold that thought, because yeah. I think that's going to take you into your third piece of the triad that you were telling me about earlier. Sure. But I need to do a station break.
You bet.
Some of our listeners may be wondering who you are and who I am. You're listening to Epic Radio, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio, and this is the Epic Storytelling Hour. I'm Fanny Crawford, your storytelling host. You can tune in to Epic Radio at www.enlightenradio.org. And our special guest today is Larry Lettich. He's a therapist in private practice in Rockville and Frederick, Maryland. And he's talking about this idea that he's in the process of wrestling into a new book, follow up on the first book that he co-authored with his wife. And actually, Helene Brenner is in the studio with us too, but right now we're focusing on Larry today. And Larry's talking about this paradigm of stories being the embodiment of what we tell ourselves, the description of ourselves that we use to walk through the universe. And and he's been talking about the connection between brain and bodies, or bodies and stories. And I'm going to turn this back to Larry so he can give you his words instead of mine.
Oh, but you're doing such a great job describing.
Well, it is fascinating listening to you. And this is not our first conversation about this topic.
I know.
So I really feel like I've been educated.
The interesting thing is that stories, when we first, people want to have their story heard. And that is very important. You know, that's, we want to, people need to have someone who listens to their story and accepts their story and takes in their story from where they are. Because you can't tell somebody their story is wrong. That's never works.
Right.
You know? And that not only does it never work, it just feels bad. It's not right. It's not a good thing to do to somebody.
Well, it's not true. Nobody's story is ever completely wrong.
Exactly. So, yeah. Exactly. So, you know, you listen to that story. That is the story that they're living right this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully, but if it's a story that's not making them happier, it's hurting them, I do believe that the story wants to live. Stories are fluid. Stories are alive. They want to live. They want to get to a good ending. They're trying to resolve something. So if you listen to a story and you listen to the body enough, you can pick up on what inside of that story is the kernel of life, the kernel of growth. And that's where we're going. That's what I'm listening for. And so the story does change because the body, we're like plants. We want to grow.
Hmm.
We
do. Absolutely, yeah.
Or we want to turn toward the sun.
Mm-hmm.
We do. We want, like, plants turn towards the sun. We turn towards where nourishment is. Mm-hmm. So when you're allowed to live, when all that stuff inside is allowed to live, it finds its way. And sometimes it finds its way because it needs somebody else. And that does lead to the issue of relationships, which is the third thing. We are made of bodies, stories, and relationships. Because we're not designed to live alone. We're not lizards. We're not. We are so social animals. We're completely social animals. We cannot, from the moment we're born, we need people. You know, that song, "People Who Need People," is just plain true. It's mawkish, but it's been proven. That's what's interesting. That science, the neuroscience shows that we can't live without other human beings. Other human beings regulate us. That's the interesting thing. We are thermostats for each other. You know, when I when a good, in a good relationship, in a good marriage, what makes it work is the fact that the two of you, when you're talking to each other, your hearts are beating more calmly. Your breaths will actually synchronize. Even your heartbeat might synchronize when you are calmly talking over coffee. That's what it's like when two people are happy with each other. And that's what keeps people together for many, many, many years. And people like that can go through crazy stuff. But two people who don't have that, the smallest thing could break them up. The small, one trauma between the two of them, and boom, they're gone. They don't need each other. They're not regulating each other. And families regulate each other all the time. Your kids, your kids' feelings certainly have create feelings in you, sure. For sure. They affect you. I mean, we're not always very good at regulating each other. We also upset each other, right? But that we're reacting constantly to one another.
So when people come to therapy, they may not want to talk about relationship to start out. They may come with some other issue. Yeah. But eventually, you're going to bring the social sector in because it's part of the triad. It's part of what makes us who we are.
Well, you'd be surprised. The fact is I think about 75% of people come into therapy talking
because
about their relationships.
Okay.
They're
That's
complaining
a big help,
about
then.
Somebody. They're unhappy with somebody.
Sure.
Or somebody's unhappy with them.
Yeah.
They'll say, oh, why doesn't she accept me? You know. Yeah, that's why they're there. Eventually, that's fine. That's fine. That's the way people are. Relationships are more of who we are than anything else. I take that back. We're bodies, we're stories, we're relationships. We're all three. We live those things all the time. And like I say, we tell each other stories and we get stories about other people, the people we live with. Like, oh, well, he's always that way. Or, you know, that's the smart child, or that's the pleasing child, or that's the oppositional kid. And that's a story.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not a, those are labels, but about a whole complex collection of things that happen. But families create these kinds of pictures of themselves.
Sure.
That's,
right.
You know?
Yeah. So, what happens or what are some of the stories that you've heard? What when people start out in a relationship doing pretty well, and it could be parents and children, it could be a couple, and then things start to fall apart or relationships start to dissolve. What happens that cause people to disconnect?
Oh, wow. Well, nobody goes into a marriage thinking, I can just hardly wait to get divorced. I mean, maybe Kim Kardashian. I mean, maybe the Kardashians. No one else. When people come together and they find each other and they have that thing that happens when somewhere along the line they decide that this is my one and only forever, or at least my one and only for now.
For now.
It's physiological, and we know this now. We have the studies. We've been studying this for 30 years. It causes something. It causes a physiological, neurological reaction. It's an attachment bond. This is hardwired into us. It's built upon what happens between baby and child, and baby and mother.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually built upon that evolutionarily. It's like that feeling of, this is the one, this is the person I need, and it's a neurological thing. And what happens there is like, that is the person who has to be there for you. I mean, it's like, that's what it feels like.
There's an imprint.
It's an imprint,
yeah.
Thank you, that's a good word. It's an imprint, it's a bond. So when people come together and they feel that sense of, wow, you're it, that's wonderful when that starts that way. But as we all know, stuff happens, and you're sooner or later, you know, going to fail each other. You're going to fail. One day you are going to fail. So what happens when the person fails? Well, it has that, the instant that you suddenly feel like, gee, this relationship may not be as safe and secure as I thought it was. Mm-hmm. You get an immediate physiological reaction. It's like that twisting in your chest. It's like that, feeling in your chest. And it actually has a technical name. It has the technical name of protest. It's It's that protest. It's that baby who needs mom and has that sound, you know, that wah.
It's a physiological protest.
It's a physiological protest. It's a mix of anger and it's a mix of anxiety and anger. Mm-hmm. Actually, that's what it sounds. It sounds like that. And I'll just give you the stereotypical thing. It's that, you know, what if the guy doesn't come home till 3 o'clock in the morning and didn't call, you know? And it's like, where were you? I've been waiting up all night. I've been worried sick, you know? Well, if the relationship is secure, if the relationship has been good, the spouse, the man in that situation, it could be the woman too. It doesn't matter. Men and women are exactly alike this way. There's no difference. You know, the comes back and realizes exactly what's happened, realizes that the anger is mostly anxiety, and works to repair the break. Mm-hmm. You know, comes back and says, oh my God, the time got away from me. I lost my phone and I was embarrassed to ask my friend to give me his phone so I could call you and time. But I know I was an idiot. I'm sorry. It'll never happen again. And, you know, and it goes back and forth for a little while. And he continues to be reassuring, and she continues to be upset, but until it finally feels okay again, and they calm down. They're both calm, and it's repaired. And sometimes it doesn't happen that fast, right? But it does happen. But what happens if, for whatever reason, in her past, he did this thing, and she comes at him, even in a very intense, aggressive way, and he gets scared because it was a little too much. Mm-hmm. It's too intense.
Overreacting.
Now he's scared and he's wondering, I thought our relationship was good. Why is she acting like this? And he is now going to react in some weird way, not in a reassuring way. Or else what if she was perfectly natural the way she was, but because of his past, he starts going, you're not going to control me. You know, Well, now she's like going, what's going on here? I was trying to fix this. I was trying to get back with him. And now we're in worse shape. So does she then say, gee, that didn't work. I should try a different tactic? No way. She's going to think it's human nature and it's biological. It's hardwired. She's going to think, I must not have done it strongly enough. I'm going to double down. I got to do exactly what I just did. Twice as hard, twice as loud, because he must not have gotten the message. Well, what's he going to do? Is he going to think, this is really interesting. Now she's more upset. I should do something else? Of course not. He's going to think, I guess she didn't get the message that I just said. I'm going to do whatever I do twice as hard. Mm-hmm. See, he's going to do that. And they're in a fight. Now they're going back and forth, and it's getting worse and worse. And you know, you've been there. Everybody who's listening right now has been there. So you do this, and let's say, but later on, you go through it all, and then you calm down, and you think about it, and you realize, oh, what happened to me? I went nuts, and the other person also feels that way, and you both come together, and you say, wow, I don't know what happened. God, that was terrible. I'm so sorry. Blah, blah, blah. And you go, then you repair it. You kiss and make up, and you go past it. But what if you can't? What if it doesn't get repaired? What if you're stuck in that place of the two of you not understanding why the other person acted that way? Now you have a tear in the relationship. Now you have a tear that hasn't been repaired. Mm-hmm. And And the next time something similar happens, you're going to both on a body level, you're going to remember that last time. Mm-hmm. And inside, it's like some part of you will go, here we go again. And it's twice as bad. And it's twice as bad. And so now you have another tear. And when people keep doing this, now you develop a pattern. And usually one of the patterns is one of the, this is not always the pattern, but this is the most typical pattern. One of the people in the couple, could be the man, could be the woman, usually the woman, could be the man, is the one who's like pursuing the relationship, trying to get the other person to understand and be there for, be, you know, value or act like they value the relationship more. Mm-hmm. The other person is now feeling like nothing I can do is ever good enough. You know, mm-hmm. the first person kind of becomes like the pursuer and starts to sound really critical. And the other person becomes a withdrawer and starts to act really distant. And underneath is thinking, nothing I'll ever do will make you stop being mad at me. And then they get stuck in that pattern. And boom, this can go on. When this starts going on for months or years or whatever, mm-hmm. that's when they come into therapy. Dave, that's what has to be fixed.
Hold that thought for a minute. I'm going to ask you, Larry, if you'd be willing to do our station identification for
Certainly.
Us.
Certainly, be happy. Happy to.
And then we'll go back to that conversation.
Sure. You're listening to the Epic Storytelling Hour, Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. I'm Larry Lettich, story fan, story seeker, and therapist, here in the Epic Radio Studio with your regular storytelling hour host, Fanny Crawford. Tune in at www.enlightenradio.org.
Thanks, Larry. I'm going to take another minute to do a couple calendar updates. And then I guess we'll talk a bit more about the connection between the brain-body relationship triad that you've been talking about and connecting that back to story for our listeners. But the calendar update, I usually start with the Speak Storytelling series that Adam Booth runs here in Shepherdstown. And Speak has been on break for the winter months, for just a few months this winter, and that'll be starting up again on April 18th with Antonio Rocha as the first storyteller. And if you want more information about that first session, or you want to know who's coming up after Antonio, you can go to www.speakwv.org, or you can call Adam Booth, who coordinates that series, directly at 304-886-9481. So that's April 18th, Antonio Rocha performing at the Shepherdstown Community Club, War Memorial Building at 102 East German Street here in Shepherdstown, 7:30 p.m., $10 in advance, $12 at the door. In Hagerstown, the story series Stories in the Round has also been on winter hiatus since our last session of Season 3 back in December. We'll be starting Season 4 on April 24th with Eloise Schottler, and I am Fanny Crawford, the coordinator of that series. So if you want more information about the series as a whole or about that first session of this new season on April 24th, you can call me at 301-730-1638 or reach me via email at Fanitsky, F-A-N-I-T-S-K-Y, at hotmail.com. That's series is also $10 in advance, $12 at the door, 7 p.m. as opposed to 7:30 for the series here in Hagerstown, 7 p.m. at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown at 13245 Searfoss Pike, 301-730-1638 if you want more information. Also coming up at that same Unitarian Universalist Church, I will be telling stories as part of the Sunday service on the last Sunday in March, which I believe is March 20, 5th, if I have that date correctly. And the usual service at the Unitarian Church there is 10:45 on Sunday morning. And my topic will be Johnny Appleseed, otherwise known as John Chapman, and a water ceremony that'll be connected to John Chapman's story and his work as a religiously eccentric individual in the early to mid-19th century. And most people know the work he did with apples, but he did a lot of other really important work on the frontier. And we're going to connect all that in a church service that day. You can get information about that session by either going to the website for the Unitarian Universalist Church of Hagerstown, or by calling me at 301-730-1638. Back to our guest this afternoon, Larry Lettich, story enthusiast and working therapist in Frederick and Rockville, Maryland. Larry, you've been telling us about brain, body, and relationship connections, or body and story and relationship connections. So keep going. You're on a roll here.
Sure, thanks. Yeah, let me tell you about some ways in which stories can go really wrong. And this whole connection between bodies and stories and how that could be really bad. And in fact, even the world of therapy and the world of psychology has created some stories that people, that really hurt people, that have hurt people. Like one of the specialties I have is adult ADHD, and something I call hidden ADHD, because a lot of people don't realize they have ADHD until one of their kids gets diagnosed with it, because it wasn't so obvious to them. They weren't, when they were young, most people who have ADHD are not bouncing off the walls. Then they didn't even bounce off the walls when they were kids. They weren't hyper, so nobody thought they had ADHD. But they had something. They had all the attention problems where they were forgetful and they were disorganized and maybe they were sloppy and maybe they couldn't remember things and maybe they weren't very good listeners, and they kept hearing things. They heard a lot. Things like, why are you so careless? And why can't you do better in school? And you're not living up to your potential. You know, I lived that story. That was my story. I have an inattentive ADHD, and I'm very open about it because I've learned a lot about it. And this is a story that people then live, and then they hurt inside. And then there's another part of the story where the whole world of therapy for many, many, many years said that all problems had to do with some kind of an emotional trauma, some kind of emotional issue. But this is not an emotional issue. This is hardwiring. And so people can go to therapy looking for what makes them so darn disorganized, and why can't they follow their goals, and why can't they do what they need to do in their lives? Well, it must be because of this happened when I was a kid, and that happened, and my parents were not nice to me. Well, your parents may not have been, didn't understand what was going on either. I mean, maybe they weren't good, or maybe they were also not understanding what was happening. And so they were feeling like you didn't care, like you just deliberately didn't want to listen. And your teachers thought you deliberately didn't want to listen.
So those adults are sometimes attributing an emotional narrative
exactly
to something else that's going on.
Precisely. And that's a wrong story. Mm-hmm. That's a really bad story, because it's a hurtful story and it's an untrue story. There's something going on. And then that person gets married, and this is happens with so many of my clients. You know, it's like the person who forgot, was late for the umpteenth time, and the spouse is just ready to, has that look in his eye or her eye, and goes, You tell me that you care, but you just don't. You don't. If you really cared, you would be here. You wouldn't have left me here. You wouldn't have left the kids waiting. Why were you late one again? And the spouse is going, knows in their heart. I mean, absolutely knows they care. They can't even explain it to themselves. They don't know why they do this. They don't know why they do this. And they are as confused as their spouse is as to what's going on. But they start to believe the story. Mm-hmm. Well, I must not care. How do I explain what's going on? How can I justify? How can I excuse my actions? I hate my actions, but I'm doing it and I don't understand why.
So then how does the therapist help change that story?
Wow. Well, it's big. First off, because when you know you have adult ADHD and you know what it does to people's sense of time and you know what it takes to understand why people, it makes people concentrate on what's urgent, what's important in front of them, what's now. They concentrate on the strongest stimulus in front of them as opposed to what's important. And it's the way their brain is hardwired. See, once you understand that's what's going on, you can work around it. You can start to deal with it somehow. Maybe you have to have a very loud buzzer go off, which says you have to leave right now. Mm-hmm. So that becomes the strongest stimulant at that moment, and that shocks them into leaving on time. Or there are a lot of tricks like that to do, but when you understand what's going on, the story, which is you don't care about me, you don't care about our relationship, that's a very, very destructive story to both of them. Because naturally, and it's totally understandable, mm-hmm. because for the person who doesn't have ADHD, there's no other explanation. They sure. would never do mm-hmm. whatever dumb thing their ADHD spouse just did, unless they completely didn't care, you know. But that's not the way the other person's head works, you know. So this is how bodies and stories kind of connect. We think we understand ourselves, and sometimes we really don't. And when you realize what's actually going on, you can put in a new story. You can change the interpretation of what's going on and find a solution. It's very prescriptive. It's very much like finding the right medicine, you know, which of course actually also can be part of the mm-hmm. part of the healing too.
Sure.
But you also need this new understanding. The new understanding changes things too. So that's one way that bodies and stories can really get mixed up, because there's a lot of suffering in getting the story in your head that you're a careless, disorganized person who for some reason doesn't or can't work up to your own potential because you're screwed up, mm-hmm. or because you had a traumatic childhood even. You know, that's not a good, if that doesn't work to solve it, then you need a new story.
Sure. I'm going to do a quick station break, and then I have another question for you. And we've talked a little bit about that question before, so I don't think this will be coming out of left field. But mm-hmm. listeners, you're tuned to the Epic Storytelling Hour on Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio in Shepherdstown, West Virginia. I'm your storytelling host, Fanny Crawford. And in the studio with us today, we have therapist and story fan Larry Ledich. And Larry's making connections between our bodies, our brains, which create stories, and relationships, which also figure into those stories that we tell ourselves. And mostly we've been talking about individual stories and family stories, the way that people explain what they see going on around them and how they construct those stories to include the other people in their relationships. But I wanted to ask us something, a question about something I heard you say months and months ago about how story can work within communities also. And I remember you saying that the reason that the Jews have survived, Jews are still Jews, because of the Seder story that we tell at the table at Passover each year. And we're of course, we're coming up on Passover season. So I just wanted you to comment on that and say what that means to you.
It means a lot to me because I love Passover. Actually, what's really funny is I have the two holidays I really loved the most when I was a kid was Passover and Christmas. Even though we didn't celebrate Christmas, I looked at Christmas sort of anthropologically because I kind of enjoyed the story. And the way I understood it was the one day of the year we reacted as if the Messiah had actually come. That's the way I interpreted it. And growing up in New York City, I didn't feel threatened by the story because the world looked very Jewish to me, you know? Mm-hmm. It was New York.
Yeah.
Everybody I knew was Jewish, so I didn't feel threatened by the Christmas story at all. It was just an interesting... they were another interesting tribe to me. But the Passover story was the second thing. And the whole thing about Passover is it's celebrated at the dinner table. It's celebrated by something called a Seder, which is with the technical meaning. The actual meaning of the word Seder is order. But it's actually this long telling of a story before you get to eat. And most Jews, if you ever go to one of these seders, you can see a lot of people waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting to the chance they get to eat. It's true. However, here's the interesting thing. Jews have been around for 3,500 years, and they've been through everything. And it's amazing that we're still around at all. How could that be? There have been religions that have come and gone, cultures and societies and countries that have disappeared in all that time. I really believe it's the Passover Seder. Nothing but the Passover Seder. Because as one author once wrote, what really connects Jews? Jews are all very, very different from each other. You put five Jews in a room, you have five different opinions. Actually, if you put five different Jews in a room, you have 20 different opinions. They don't even agree with themselves, usually, much less other Jews. And what it is that ties all Jews together is this idea that somehow we're all descendants of this group of people who came out of Egypt, who used to be slaves in Egypt and came to the land of Canaan, the promised land. Well, this is really funny too, because we don't even know if that's true. That's hysterical. There is no archaeological evidence that this even happened. And yet, I kind of believe something happened, because, man, this story, we tell it as if it's happened. We've been telling it as if it's happened for so long. It must have been based on something real. So at least somebody came out of there. It might have been only 20 people, but they came out of Egypt. Well, but here's the deal. This is a story. This is a story passed down year after year after year after year for now, actually in its present form, basic present form, the Seder has existed for, I believe, 1900 years. That's a heck of a story. And you've got this story going, and this story says that you came out of Egypt. And to think of yourself as you are the one who came out of Egypt. You know, we were slaves in Egypt. Not they were slaves in Egypt. We were slaves in Egypt. So it's this continual story of who we are and what happened to us. And that's holding, that literally has held the Jewish people together through everything for all this time. And here's this interesting thing. I would say that until recently, in my own lifetime, I can remember when I felt that America was you could, it wasn't the United States of America, it was United Stories of America. Mm. You in school, you heard about the Pilgrims and about Thanksgiving and about the Revolutionary War and about George Washington and about Lincoln, and it was mostly the same story. A lot of it we say now, we realize it didn't happen exactly that way, but that was the story we grew up with. Unfortunately, nowadays, we're starting to get where we don't have the same story. What's important? What? Who are we? What is our story? And you need that. It's the united. When a community has a certain story, that's what's holding them together.
Mm-hmm.
It's just. I don't think anything else holds a community together more than that. Especially when time and distance and things change.
Well, yeah, I have a very visceral memory as a child of the stories that made me who I am. And it's certainly mm-hmm. true that when there's a group of people who are all telling you the same story, that is who you're going to be, at least until you figure out you might be somebody else.
That's true.
But that's a very grounding and foundational experience to feel yourself in the world based on the stories that your community tells you are your stories too.
Right.
So
the stories change, but the basic story
mm-hmm.
needs to stay the same. It's interesting because the story won't stay exactly the same. You can't live. You don't think of. But you're still the person. I mean, I know. I've listened to you. You still feel that you are those stories that you heard.
Sure.
But they've also evolved. You're not just that. You're not the exact story you heard when you were 5 or 10.
Well, the stories have deepened. I've heard the same incidents described from other people's perspectives, and I've read about the same incidents from other people's perspectives. So if you're paying attention, the story does develop. The story changes.
What's really funny is that in my lifetime, as far as the Passover story, the Seder is, well, there's a book that you get. It's mm-hmm. called the Haggadah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now, you wouldn't be surprised to know that now there's like 4,000 Haggadahs, know? They're different versions of the same story, but it's still the same basic story, but the interpretation of the story has changed over a lot. But that doesn't matter. It's still the story. It's really kind of funny that way.
Yeah. It's fascinating how the stories that we tell each other as families, the stories that we pass on to our children, and the ways that we create continuity and connection, mm-hmm. relationships around us.
Mm-hmm.
We're about to close out the hour. It looked like you had something else you wanted to explore a bit before we do that.
Yeah, perhaps. I guess I'll keep it simple and say that it's as important as our story is. It's so important also, like I just said, to be aware that we're not really our stories. We're not really our bodies. We're not really our relationships. There's something else. We are actually in process all the time. There's some kind of spirit or consciousness that we are, that's underneath, that is always going on. And we get in trouble when we think that we are our story. We get in trouble when we think, I am this. I am this and I've always been this, and I will always be this, and you are that, and you will always be that. And that's all there is to it. We'll never change. That's where people get in trouble. We're always changing. We're processes. We're not stories. And we're not bodies, even. We're not even feelings. All those are things that are manifestations of something even deeper. And that deeper thing is constantly in motion. Constantly in motion. We are changing moment to moment, whether we realize it or not. And we're free to change. We're free to interpret things different. We're free. We are free to revise our stories.
This is fascinating, Larry. Thank you. I did want to ask you, we haven't talked at all about engaging our listeners in this conversation. Is there a way for people to reach you, if they're interested in your therapeutic practice, or if they just want to talk about these ideas with you?
I guess I'd love to hear people's thoughts and ideas. You can email me at lletich at frederickcounselinginc.com. You can look up my website, frederickcounselinginc.com. Look up my name. You definitely can write me or call me at 240-315-8100 for therapy or any comments. It would be really kind of wonderful to hear people's comments about what was said today. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, I think you might hear from some people. This is really a good way to think about the world and to think about it, an expansion of the idea of storytelling beyond entertainment, beyond
wow. It's way bigger than entertainment.
Yeah.
Right? You know that.
Absolutely.
We know that, right? Everybody who's listening to this right now knows this story is way bigger than entertainment.
I'm going to let that be your last word. Okay. Larry, that's a great way to end the interview. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
You know, as you progress in these thoughts, maybe you can come back another time and we can pursue this again.
That's cool. Sure. Happy to.
I'm going to do a brief calendar update just to remind people that the Speak Story Series begins again, season 5 for Speak on April 18th with Antonio Rocha, Brazilian-American mime and storyteller who will be at the War Memorial Building, the Shepherdstown Community Center building at 7:30 p.m. April 18th. And you can get more information by contacting Adam Booth, who coordinates that series, at www.speakwv.org. info@speakwv.org, or calling Adam directly at 304-886-9481. The Stories in the Round series begins again in Hagerstown at the Unitarian Universalist Church at 13245 Searfoss Pike with Eloise Schottler, who's coming back after 3 years. She hasn't been with us since the very first season at Stories in the Round, and that is April 24th. The fourth Monday of the month. $10 in advance, $12 at the door, and you can get more information by contacting me via phone, 301-730-1638, or at my email address, fenitsky@hotmail.com. Also wanted to let people know that there will be a house concert in Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. If you're going to be up in that area on April 15th, I will be doing a house concert for friends who are happy to open their home to friends of story. If you're interested in coming, I can give you more information if you contact me at that same number. I do have Marianne and Larry Hayes' contact information too, but since we're running out of time, I'm just going to repeat my phone number, 301-730-1638, and that's the evening of April 15th, and I'll be doing a set about grandmothers. Some of you out there have heard some of my grandma stories, but this will be a whole more than an hour of telling just various grandma stories. This is Fanny Crawford, your storytelling host on Eastern Panhandle Independent Community Radio, signing off on the Storytelling Hour. We've been listening to Larry Lettich, story fan and therapist, talking about the connection between therapy and storytelling and mental health and storytelling. And this session that was just broadcast will be podcast, so you can hear it again if you're interested. But in the meantime, the Epic Storytelling Hour offers listeners a window into the world of storytelling by traditional and non-traditional tellers, encouraging our listening community to preserve share, and expand our own stories. Thanks for listening. Stay tuned for music. And Rosetta Casper's Splendid Table?
Food programming.
Okay. On Enlighten Radio. And I'll look forward to having you in the audience again next Monday when we'll continue storytelling. Thanks a lot. Have a good week.